All right, we start here on the top of Chof Ted Amud Aleph by the two dots. Yardugi Shamim, when the rain falls. Tana, Mishetisrech Hamikpeh Shel Grisim. That it was when the pot of food of Grisim gets ruined. And as Rashi points out, the Grisim, the legumes that are being cooked here, are much faster to spoil with the water. And therefore, they're the paradigm or what the threshold that is used to determine how much rain has come in, that it's enough that you must leave the sukkah. Bayhaive Kayotiv Kamid Rav Yosef. Abaye was sitting in front of Rav Yosef. Remember that Abaye's Rebbe is Rabbo, and he also learned by Rav Yosef. See that many places in Shas that Abaye reminds Rav Yosef what he forgot. Rav Yosef becomes ill, forgets a lot of his Torah, and loses his eyesight. And when he's reviewing sometimes later, Abaye say, oh, you told us in the past. And so Abaye reminds Rav Yosef. So Abaye is a Talmud of both Rav Yosef and Rabbo. So here Abaye is sitting in front of Rav Yosef. B'mitalalta. Nashav zika, a wind blew, kamaita tzivuta, and these little splinters or chips of wood come into the sukkah. Rav Yosef, penuli manai mihacha. Take my utensils, take out all my stuff from the sukkah, meaning that he's going to leave the sukkah at this point. Amalei Abaye, v'atnan, doesn't our Mishnah give us the threshold by which you leave the sukkah, which is, mishetisrach hamikpeh. That's only when the food spoils. The food hasn't spoiled here. So Amalei Lididi came in da Anina Datai. I, who am very particular about these items, Kamisha Tisrach HaMikpeh Damali. So for me, it's this similar to the food being spoiled, since I am so particular, very sensitive to these things. And Anina Datai is the equivalent of what we'd call an istinis. And Rav Yosef himself says it about himself in the Gemara in Pesachim. Remember in the 10th parak of Pesachim, Rav Yosef says, I am one of the Anini Adat, very particular, sensitive, and therefore a lot of things bother me. And he says that there's Shlosha Chayehem Enim Chayim. There are three people whose lives really aren't lives. And he says there, Harachmanim, Haratchanim, Vanini Adat. Those that are merciful, those that are quick to anger, Vanini Adat, and those that are very particular and sensitive to these things. They can't handle anything that is disgusting or a little out of place or not exactly the way it's supposed to be. Rav Yosef, kulu itnahu bi. And Rav Yosef says, I have all three of those midot. A Rahman, a Ratchan, and a Anine Adat. So he has all of these qualities. And you can see how those individuals are not relaxed. They're very tense all the time because a person is very sensitive, a Rahman. Everything bothers them. Everything emotionally impacts them. And so therefore, chayim, enim chayim, they're too sensitive. And then there's ratchanim, obviously someone who is quick to anger. Also, it's not a person who's relaxed or can take things in stride, but his threshold for anger is very low. And therefore, he's always bursting, exploding. And anini ayadat, obviously someone who can't handle things that are a little bit off or a little bit different or out of place. That's also someone who has a very difficult time getting settled or relaxed. So those three things Rav Yosef says about himself, and then the Anine Adat is referencing what he says over here, that I can't handle this. This is too much for me. And it's the equivalent for a normal person of what would have been that the rain had gotten into the pot or into the dish that's there. Seen in the sukkah, and it starts to rain. V'yarad. And now he goes down. And now V'yarad is the equivalent or the opposite of Allah, which is that if there's a sukkah on the roof, then when they descend from the roof, that means they're leaving the sukkah. Can finish his meal inside and then go back. Once he's made the decision to leave the sukkah and gotten, quote unquote, permission to leave the sukkah, then he doesn't have to run back to the sukkah afterwards. You finish your meal inside and then you return to the sukkah afterwards. If he was sleeping in the sukkah, it starts to rain in the middle of the night. V'yarad, again, descends from the sukkah, he leaves the sukkah. Ein matrichino tol alot, ad she'yor. So then we don't bother him to go back until she'yor. Now she'yor has two meanings. When it's written with an aleph, it means until it gets light out. And then she'yor with an ayin means until he wakes up. That's what the Gemara is going to query now. Which she'yor are we talking about here? V'ayluhu, ad she'yor, until he wakes up. Oh, ad she'yor, until it gets light out. So his permission, basically, whatever activity he's engaged in, once he leaves the sukkah, he can complete that activity. He doesn't have to return until the completion of that activity. If he's eating a meal, it means completing the meal, and then he returns. He's not obligated. Obviously, you can, but you're not obligated to go back. Sleeping. Until you wake up from your sleep, until you completed your sleep. Question is, what's the completion of sleep? Is that when you wake up? Or is that when it gets light out? When the morning comes, that's the end of your sleep. So So which of those two is the determining factor for the termination of your sleep? But you're allowed to finish sleeping and then return to the sukkah. So when it says, Tashma, ad shi'or, v'yale amud ha-shachar. Then you can go back to the sukkah, ad shi'or, when it gets light out, v'yale amud ha-shachar, and the amud ha-shachar comes out. As Rashi points out, these are two different things, because ad shi'or is heir ha-mizrach, whereas alud amud ha-shachar is before that. Heir ha-mizrach we saw in the Gemara in Yoma, heir ha-mizrach was later than amud ha-shachar. That was to be sure that they already passed the time that it was morning. So here the bright is saying, well, until it gets light out, until amud ha-shachar. So which one is it? It seems inconsistent. Tarte? Why would you have two different demarcations which are different? Ela ema ad she'or v'yale amud ha-shachar. Not ye'or with an aleph, but rather ye'or with an ayin. And therefore you need both of them. Until you wake up, and amud ha-shachar has come. And that's the way that we paskin, that when the sleep ends, when you wake up, but it's only when you wake up, when it's already the time to wake up. So they're really synonymous, which is, when does a normal person wake up is in the morning. So the two should be synonymous, which is you wake up in the morning. Now, if one happens without the other, then you don't have to worry about it. You need both. You need to both wake up, and it has to be the morning. So if you sleep past amud ha-shachar and then only wake up, we don't force you to get up. Nobody has to wake you up at amud ha-shachar and say, get back to the sukkah. And the same is true the other way around. If you wake up at 3 in the morning and it's not amud ha-shachar, you can go back to sleep. And that's considered to be the normal course of sleep. And then you continue sleeping. And then when you get to the morning and you wake up, then you return to the sukkah. Ibai lahu. This is the question from the Mishnah. Mashal lamad davar dumeh. What is this case in the Mishnah similar to where he throws the water back in the face? Who's throwing the water back in whose face? So Ibai lahu. Mi shafach lemi. Who threw it into whose face? Tashma, the Tanya. The bright that explains what the Mishnah meant. It says, Shafach lo rabo kaiton al panav. The Rebbe that's throwing the water back in the face of the Eved. V'amar lo. He's implying by doing that, efshi b'shimcha. I'm not interested in your service. And so too, with regards to the sukkah, Eved represents Klal Yisrael. Shimush, him servicing, is the sitting in the sukkah, doing the mitzvah Hashem. The rain is the equivalent of the Rab throwing the water back in the face of the Eved, saying, I don't want your service. The same thing, Hashem, when it rains, is saying, I'm not interested in your mitzvah of sukkah. That's why it's raining, to get you out of the sukkah. So that's the mashal of raining during Sukkot. And obviously, it doesn't matter which way, truthfully, the mashal goes. It's obviously a negative thing. It's a siman klala. So Gemara wants to understand, what is the siman klala? Is it that Hashem is rejecting our mitzvah? Is he rejecting our sitting in the sukkah? Or is the klala the yiridat gishamim? Is it the rain itself that's falling that is the klala? Over here, it's clear that Hashem is rejecting our sitting in the sukkah, in the way that we phrase it. The other way around, it would be that we were rejecting the rain that Hashem sent down. That would be the klala. But here, it's the other way that Hashem is rejecting our sitting in the sukkah, and that's why it is a siman klala. Now, with regards to rain in the sukkah, it's important to understand what is the reason that one leaves the sukkah when it's raining. You could argue, and there are Rishonim that say this, that it's an extension of mitzta'er. Similar to what the story of Rabbi Yosef before, someone who's mitzta'er in the sukkah, is patur min ha-sukkah, and he can leave the sukkah. Tosafot before said that mitzta'er in the sukkah derives from teshvu kein taduru. Just like in your house, if you were mitzta'er, you wouldn't stay in that location, you wouldn't stay in the house. You'd move to somewhere where you were not the mitzta'er. So tu by the sukkah. When you're mitzta'er, then you leave the sukkah, because it's not teshvu kein taduru. You're not living in the sukkah like the way you would live in your house. Rashi over there talked about mitzta'er having to be a direct derivative of the sukkah. It's not something that you're mitzta'er. As you mitzta'er, because in your sukkah, and the situation would be improved if you left this sukkah. So that's not necessarily inconsistent with Tosafot, but defines what type of tzar or mitzta'er we're talking about. So you could argue here that rain is no different than mitzta'er. Rain is something that causes you to be mitzta'er, and therefore you would not want to stay in the sukkah because you're in discomfort, and therefore you leave the sukkah. There are others who believe, and you can see this in the Psak Halacha of the Ramah, based on the Yerushalmi, who says that someone who sits in a sukkah when it's raining out, nikra hejot. It's called a hejot. I mean, it's equivalent of, we call him an idiot, for sitting in the sukkah. The question is why? Why is someone who's sitting in the sukkah when it's raining out termed as a hejot rather than the normal case of mitzta'er? So it might be that there's a difference between rain and mitzta'er. In the case of mitzta'er, the sukkah is fine. The problem is in the individual. The gavro is in pain. The gavro has some discomfort. And therefore, the gavro is patur from the sukkah. Sukkah itself is still a sukkah. He just leaves the sukkah because of his discomfort. He has a dispensation to leave. That means if he stays in the sukkah anyway, that he might be accomplishing the mitzvah of sukkah. He has a dispensation if he wishes to take it, but if he doesn't leave, he might be accomplishing the mitzvah of sukkah. By rain, on the other hand, it seems that rain is not a problem of mitzvah necessarily, but a problem of ois sukkah. It's not a sukkah anymore. It's not a sukkah because it doesn't provide shelter. It's not protecting you from the elements. Just like in your house, if there was rain pouring into the house and the ceiling was leaking, you wouldn't stay in that room or in that location because it's no longer serving the purpose that you meant for having a house or a room there. So because of that, you would leave. But that's the difference, possibly, between mitzvah and yiridat gishamim. By mitzvah, it's your tour, and if you opt to stay in, you're still sitting in a sukkah. On the other hand, by yiridat gishamim, it's no longer a sukkah. You stay in the sukkah, that's why you're called a hedjot, because you're not even accomplishing the mitzvah of sukkah. To stay in the sukkah while it's raining does nothing. You're actually doing no mitzvah, and why bother to stay in the sukkah in that case? Now, it might even be worse. It might even be that you're coming into a problem of aveira, which is that you're not allowed to benefit from the sukkah, shelo b'makom mitzvah. And that's all the things of the sukkah are dedicated to the mitzvah, and over here you're staying in the sukkah, but makom it's not a sukkah, and that you're not supposed to stay in the sukkah. The Ramah says that it's a problem, or seems to be a problem, not mitzvah, but ois sukkah, because he calls you a hedjot. The mitzvah air, if you call the rain a problem of mitzvah air, then it would be no different than mitzvah air. If you take the view that it's mitzvah air, to stay in the sukkah would be plausible or possible and accomplish the mitzvah if you stay there. If you think yiridat gishamim is a different category totally, then staying in the sukkah is worthless. And that seems to be the psak of the Ramah. Again, you could argue other Rishonim and others believe that it's an extension of mitzvah air. If it's an extension of mitzvah air, then to stay in the sukkah would be fine, because even though you have the dispensation, if you don't opt to take the dispensation, you waive the penalty, then you can stay in the sukkah and accomplish the mitzvah of sukkah. Tarabanan, bizman shachamaluka, siman rada chola olam kulo. When the sun is, let's say, hit, but here means that something goes wrong with the sun, then that's a bad sign for the whole world. So now, the Gemara is shifting because of this siman klala of raining during sukkah. It talks about other simanei klala that derive from a natural phenomenon. So over here, they said, if something goes wrong with the sun, that's a bad sign for the whole world, because it's the equivalent of somebody leaves a light on, and then they turn the light off. If they turn the light off, they're indicating that they're not happy with you. So if you shut out the light of the world, which is the sun, then it's problematic. So most think that what we're talking about here is an eclipse, and that's why it's a siman ra li'olam, is when you have an eclipse. There are others that want to suggest that it's another, like a sunspot, or other problems with the sun. What is this comparable to? The melech basar v'dam shasasu dali avadav. He made a meal for his servants, ve'niach panas lifnehem, and he left a panas before them. Now, today, the modern day word panas means a flashlight or a headlight. Rashi says, we are lanterna. It's a lantern. He put in light for them. Kas alehem. Then he got upset at them. Vamar lavdo tul panas mipnehem. Turn out the light. Right? Ve'oshivam b'choshech, and lead them in the dark. So the same thing, that's why it sounds more like an eclipse than a sunspot, but it sounds like when Hashem's shutting out the light of the world. So that's negative for the world. Tanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, Kozman Shemorot Lokim, Siman Radus Onem Shel Yisrael. Anytime any of the constellations are hit, then it's a bad sign for Sonem Shel Yisrael's Lashon Saginor. It's bad for Kalal Yisrael. Rashi says here that the constellations are the sun, the moon, the stars. Anything that happens with them is bad for Kalal Yisrael. Mipnei, Shemelu Madim B'Makutehem. Because they're always the ones who get blamed. They're always the ones who get into trouble. So, mashal, the sofer, shabal beit sefer, because a teacher that comes to school, rutsabi ado, and he's got a whip or he's got a stick in his hand, mi doeg, who gets worried in the class? Mishiragio, lukot, b'cho yom ve'yom, who doeg? The troublemaker is the one who gets worried, because he knows that if he's got the whip or the stick, it's most likely for him, not for someone else in the class. So too, Klal Yisrael is the one who gets hit all the time. So, if something goes wrong, the likelihood is it's gonna land on the Jews. Tanabanan, bizman shechamaluka, siman rado uvdei kochavim. Something goes wrong with the sun, and there's an eclipse, that's a bad sign for the non-Jews. Levanaluka, if the moon has that, the eclipse of the moon, siman rado sunahem shel Yisrael. It's a bad sign for Klal Yisrael. Why? Mivnei shiyisrael monim lelevana, because we go by a lunar calendar, but uvdei kochavim lechama, they follow the solar calendar. So because of that, they, when the Chamaz Loka, it's bad for them. When the Lavanaz Loka, it's bad for us. Loka b'mizrach, it happens on the eastern side, meaning when the sun's rising. Siman ra li'oshvei mizrach, that's a bad sign for those people that live on the east. B'marav, when it happens on the west. Siman Ral Yoshvei B'Marav. It's a bad sign for those that are living on the western side. B'Emza Rakia. It happens, you know, at noontime in the middle of the sky. Siman Ral Lechol Olam Kulo. Then it's a bad sign for everybody. Panav Domim L'Dam. If it looks reddish when it happens, then Cherev Bali Olam. Then it's a predictor of battle, war coming to the world. L'Sak, if it's dark, blackish, grayish in color when this happens, Chitzei Ra'av Bayim Le'olam, then famine and starvation are coming to the world, which leaves the person's face darkened or sunken. L'Zu V'L'Zu, if it looks like both, then Cherev V'Chitzei Ra'av Bayim Le'olam, then you're looking forward to both of those coming to the world. L'Ka B'Knisato, if it happens at sunset, Puranot Shohel Abo, then the bed's coming, but it's going to take time, because the sun went all day before it happens. So that same day, there's more time to come before it happens. Beyitziato, at sunrise, mimaheret labo. Then it's going to happen quickly because as soon as the sun rose, it happened. Beyishamim chiluf dvarim. And some people say just the opposite, which is that if it happens right at sunset, then things are going to happen quickly because there's no more time left in the day. And it happened then. Versus if it happens in the morning, right at sunrise, there's plenty of time left in the day, and therefore it'll take its time to come. There's no nation when the nation is punished that its God is punished with it. Now obviously God can't be real because we don't believe that there are other gods out there. The Rashi over here explains Eloa as Sarah Hamilitz Bada. It is the heavenly angel who is their proponent. Alright, so then what we're talking about here is when the nation gets punished, so does its Sarah. That's what Rashi says. Now you could argue that it means Eloa, it means that when Hashem attacks the nation, he also attacks their gods to show them that the gods are not powerful. Because it says, by Mitzrayim, but the whole Elohei Mitzrayim et Seshvatim. And all the gods of Mitzrayim, I will bring judgment. So Hashem not only destroyed the Mitzrayim and punished the Mitzrayim, but he also, their gods were punished. Now whether that means their sire, their angel in heaven, or whether that means their gods that they're worshipping, that Hashem is showing them powerless or meaningless. When they do what Hashem asks of them, they don't have to fear any of this. Shinemar. Ko amar Hashem, el derech ha-koyim, al tilamdu. Don't follow the ways of the other nations. Ume'otot ha-shamayim, al techatu. Worry about the constellations or the astrology. Ke chayatu ha-goyim e'ema, because that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of all the constellations and the astrology, but if you just follow my way and not the way of the goyim, then you won't have to worry about that. I mean, you'll be Ein Mazal Yisrael, which is the concept that the Jews are not governed by the astrology of the other nations, but rather they're independent of it because they follow the word of Hashem. So if you follow the word of Hashem, then you won't have to worry about it. But if you follow the other nations, then you're going to have to worry about it just like they worry about it because you won't have that protection. The non-Jews will have to fear it, but you won't have to fear it as long as you don't follow the ways of the Goyim. Tarabanan. Because of four things, the sun is hit, eclipsed. The head of the Beit Din passes away, and he wasn't given proper eulogy or proper honors in his death. Nara Marusa was attacked in the city and screams out, and nobody comes to her aid. V'mishkav Zachar, over homosexuality, v'shnei achim, shpach daman ke'achad. And two brothers are killed simultaneously. Rashi says of here, Lo shamati tam badavar. He says, I don't know why these are correlated. This first series is harder to correlate. The subsequent series are easier to correlate, which is, Bushpil arba dvarim ameorot lokim. Constellations are affected by these four things. Al kodvei plaster valmidei edut sheker. Kodvei plaster, people who are forgers, people who forge documents, forge contracts. Valmidei edut sheker, people who testify falsely. Valmigadlei behema daka be'eretz Yisrael, someone who brings up grazing animals that are in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi says the problem is that they go into other people's fields. The truth is, even if they don't go into other people's fields, they leave the place basically a desert afterwards. After they graze in these areas, they destroy anything that's living in those areas, and they leave it desolate. Valkotzitzei yilanot tovot, and anybody cuts down fruit trees. So all of these individuals cause for this punishment. Now here it makes more sense because these are what I'd call the change in a natural order. Right? Generally people have trust in one another. If you forge documents and you testify falsely, You've broken down the basic social structure and social trust that exists among people. And so you're breaking the natural order. So too here, by Megadli Bei Medaka, you kill everything that is natural around there. You destroy the nature that's there. And same with cutting down a fruit tree. So just like you are changing the natural order, so too Hashem affects nature. And that's why the Milrot are looking for these items. Shvil Dal Darim, Nechsei Balabatim Nimsirim Lamachut. Over four things, the possessions of Balabatim here just doesn't mean laymen, but rather wealthy people, are given over to the government. The government confiscates their property. Because they keep around paid contracts. They lend out with interest. They had the ability to stop something and they didn't intervene. And in public, they donate large sums of money, but they never pay up their donation. So in all of these cases, again, it's easy to understand why they're going to lose their money. They're acting inappropriately with their money. They're using, here in the case where they have shtarot that are already paid, they keep them around. The only reason to keep around a shtar that's paid is because it's going to get collected on again. So that's already not such proper behavior. And because you're acting inappropriately with this and causing people to have to pay twice, in that case, we're going to take away your wealth. The next one with Malvei Beribit, which is an Isur Doraita, to lend with interest, they're taking what doesn't belong to them or really preying on those that are in need because they need to borrow the money and they're preying on them by charging them interest when they really should be lending to them without interest. Because of their wealth, people would listen to them. They have influence over the generation. If they don't exert that influence in order to make people do the right thing, then Hashem will take away their influence. I mean, their influence is because of their wealth. Hashem will take away their wealth. That's obvious that if they pretend to be generous with their money and that they never give it, then obviously that's a problem. The Gemara in Tanit also speaks about that. That's the equivalent of clouds showing up and there's no rain. That Hashem brings the clouds as if it's going to rain and then it doesn't rain. It's a tease that the clouds are coming. So too, people are posting the Kabarabim and never give the money. It's a tease that they're promising all this money and never give it. Again, that's why they're punished with the loss of their money. There's four reasons the property of these wealthy individuals dwindles and goes to nothing, goes to pot. If they hold back or withhold paying workers, those that don't pay at all. One of them is that he delays or tarries in paying the workers, and the other one is that he doesn't pay them at all. He cheats them out of their salaries. And again, they reject any responsibility. Again, with privilege comes responsibility. You have the wealth, you have responsibility. So parek ol, whether it's parek ol of the responsibility of leadership, or parek ol is that they leave the world of Torah and mitzvot. And they put it on their friends, vagasot aruach, and for haughtiness. So again, rejecting their obligation to take responsibility because of their wealth and to be leaders of the community, and they drop that on someone else, and they free themselves of that burden, then they'll be freed of the privilege as well. Vagasot aruach, those that are haughty, vagasot aruach keneged kulam. And the haughtiness is the worst of them all. Aval banavim ktiv, and to end off on a good note, it says, for those that are humble, vanavim yirshu aretz vit angu arov shalom. So that the anavim will inherit the land, and they will enjoy all the peace. So those that are humble are able to enjoy the fruits of their labor. Now, with regards to the constellation and the eclipses, Fred wanted to ask the question, how can a natural phenomenon be a predictor of something that's wrong or a result of something that's wrong? So the Rishonim, the Achronim, take this up. The Ramban al Torah already speaks about it with regards to a rainbow, the Keshet. How can the Keshet be a siman if it's a natural phenomenon that happens after the rain comes and then the sun refracts the light on the water? So if it's a natural phenomenon, how is that a siman? Over there it's a little easier because it's a reminder rather than a siman of something to happen. It's a reminder that in the past that rain led to something terrible. And here this reminder afterwards that natural phenomenon is the reminder, the zecher labrit, that Hashem, the covenant that Hashem has with us. Over here it's much harder to explain because here an eclipse, whether it's a lunar eclipse or a solar eclipse, is a natural occurring phenomenon that can be predicted. And how could you say that's a siman ra'a bali olam? So some suggest that even though it is predictable, when it does happen, then it's a time period when you have to be doing, you have to worry about that. And we've seen that in the Gemara, at the end of Shabbat, with the story with Rabbi Akiva, and the story at the end of Gemara Brachot with Rabbi Yosef and Rabbo, where they had gotten some message from a Kaldai, from an astrologer, gave them some information, one about Rabbi Kiva's daughter, and Rabbi Yosef about the fact that when he became Rosh Hashiva, he was going to pass away very shortly afterwards. So they got that information, and they were choshesh for that information. They worried about that information they got. Even though, quote-unquote, ain't mazal Yisrael, and they shouldn't have been worried about it because Hashem can protect them from it. Nevertheless, the astrology, and many of the Rishonim, including the Ramban, believe in this. There's a series of rationalist Rishonim that think there's nothing to this and the astrology, but there's a large group of Rishonim, including the Ramban and Siato, that believe that there is something to it, and you just don't know how to interpret it. You don't know how to deal with it. So when it happens, or when it's going to happen, you have to be choshesh that something could go wrong. Now, if you're doing right and you're serving Hashem, Hashem might protect you from whatever bad is going to happen. So even with natural occurring phenomenon, when the astrology is predictive in nature, because Hashem brings his kochot through the astrology, passes his kochot through them, and since that's the way they're like, as if he's a puppeteer that's moving different things, and there are different layers of puppets, so if he moves the constellations, it affects things down on Earth. Same thing here with the eclipse. Now again, even though it's predictable, but if it's predictable, then you have to worry about the fact that during that time period, something bad could happen. You just have to take extra precaution. That's one way to view it. There are others that say, no, it's not an eclipse. It's some other phenomenon, like the sunspots and so on, that are not naturally occurring phenomena, not predicted phenomena, but things that happen at times that are unpredictable, like a shooting star, the things that happen where the moon is somehow covered, but not when it's a lunar eclipse. Whatever the reasons are that something happens, that's the situation in which you would worry, because that's an extraordinary event, and that's when you should worry about it. Again, it does not read so well into the Gemara, because the Gemara seems to indicate over here that the mashal for the problem is when the sun gets blocked. So that sounds more like an eclipse than sunspots. That's what I mentioned before. The problem with the other explanation is that it says here that these things are a result of certain behaviors. Well, how are they a result of certain behaviors if they are a natural occurring phenomenon? Natural occurring phenomenon, how do you say, oh, this causes this to happen? So that's a harder thing to explain in the context of saying that it's a recurring natural phenomenon, and you have to explain why they're connected. And I said before, I couldn't explain the first four, as Rashi says, but the other items I could explain to you, the correlation between the punishment and the activities that were taking place. And so the same thing here. I think when Chazal is speaking about because of these sinners, this happens, not necessarily saying cause and effect, but rather saying that this happens, like the Hashem changes the course of nature, or the natural course of nature is upset or blocked, because these people aren't acting like they should or breaking the natural order. Midah connected midah, not necessarily in punishment, but an awareness of this activity is improper. And I think that's the way you would have to explain it if you believe that it is natural occurring phenomenon. So you can look at it. The Ramban himself on the Torah discusses it. It's not, I would say, simple to deal with, but I'm giving you some framework in which you could explain what it was said in the Gemara before. All right, with that, we end the Perek Adran Alach Hayashin. And now we begin Lulav HaGazul. We're shifting from Sukkah now into the Arbat HaMinim. And this is a classic parak in terms of yeshiva to learn this parak, because there are some pretty big concepts, call them Shas concepts, big ideas that you can spend a lot of time on explaining and understanding, breaking down. And the structure of the parak is that you have here Lulav first, and then it goes through each of the Minim, discussing the Psalim, what's good for it, what's not good for it. Pattern of Mishnayot that are very similar throughout the prakim that we're going to see here. The first one we start with is lulav agazul ve'yavesh pasul. A stolen lulav is problematic, and a dried out lulav is also problematic. We're going to come back and discuss both of those. Shel asherav shel ir nidachad pasul. Lulav that is brought from an asherah that was worshipped as Bodh Zarah, and ir nidachad, a city that has now been condemned to be put to death and all their possessions burned. Both of those are pasul. The Gemara will later say, kitute michtat shiurei. It's as if it doesn't exist anymore. Since it's omed b'sreifah, the only thing you're allowed to do with it is burn it. It's usur ba'anan, burn it. It's as if it doesn't exist. And so it's lacking the minimum shiur of lulav, and that's why you can't utilize it. An asherah is not a particular tree. An asherah is a type of worship that involved a tree. So it could be a palm tree. It doesn't have to be the particular asherah tree. There's a nature of worship that usually dedicated the fruits of that tree to the avodah zarah. So it could be about a palm tree, and that's obviously what they're speaking about here. Niktam rosho, if the tip is nipped, nifritzu alav, or the leaves are separated, pasul. Nifridu alav, if the leaves spread out, kasher. So Tosafot discusses over here how I differentiate between nitlash and niktam, and he says that, l'chora ma'iri b'shnei emtzayim. talking about the middle, two middle leaves, the double middle leaves in the middle. They come out of the top of the spine of the lulav. So that's the center spine, the center leaf that goes up to the top, which is the tiomet. Everybody knows the tiomet. So that, if it's nipped. He says, we're talking about the majority of the upper leaves. Inami, it's strictly the Rabbi Shimon Levi Shmuel Nitla, or from there we learn out that if it's taken out, it's problematic. That when it's taken out, it's problematic when you take out one of the two leaves. Nikdam Rosho is only when you have both of them that are nicked at the top, or clipped at the top. So it has to differentiate between the leaf being missing entirely versus it being cut at the top. So Tosfos is trying to play between them, what's the difference between them, but we're definitely talking about that central spine, the two middle leaves. Now, Nifritsu Alav. Rashi says Nifritsu Alav is that they were pulled away. They had a lulav, and they peeled the leaves away from the spine, and then they bound them back together. The equivalent of what he calls a broom. Lulav broom is like that. You pull it apart, and then you bind them back together, and use it to broom with. So that's what Rashi says, Nifritsu Alav. Tosafot does not like that explanation, but rather he explains it that each leaf, which is a double in the lulav, you went ahead and separated. They're still all attached to the spine, but you peeled apart each of the double leaves. That's what's called Nifritsu Alav, and that is pasul. Now, Nifritsu Alav is simply that it's grown, and then the leaves start to open up. And a lulav that grows when it's straight up, as it matures, it opens up. The leaves open up and they spread, and that's how you get the leaves of the palm tree. So that's what's called nifridu alav, and that is kasher. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, yagdenu milamalo. You know, in order to solve that problem, just bind it at the top, and you'll pull the leaves back in so that they are straight with the spine of the lulav. Tzinei Har HaBarzel. Tzinei Har HaBarzel, which the Gemara will get to later, is a certain type of palm tree where the leaves are very short. And each leaf doesn't cover the majority of the spine. Each leaf is very short. The Gemara will say that in order to be kasher, it has to be that the top of the bottom leaf touches the bottom of the next leaf. Meaning that they have to overlap. The leaves have to at least overlap here, in order for it to be kasher. Lulav sheish bo shlosha tvachim g'day la'anei abo kasher. The lulav that is three tvachim tall, which matches the size of the hadas, plus another tefach for you to hold it, that's four tvachim in total, that lulav is kasher. Alright, now we have to go back to lulav ha-gazul ve'ayavesh. In terms of lulav ha-gazul, the Gemara is going to discuss that in a minute, but it derives from lakachtam lachem b'yom ha-rishon, that you have to take lakachtam lachem, you have to take your own lulav on the first day. So the requirement is to be your lulav for the first day. That is why lulav ha-gazul is pasul, and the Gemara will discuss that in 1 second. Hayavesh, lulav hayavesh is pasul, is dried out. Here, there's some controversy as to why it's pasul. Rashi says it's a problem of Zekeli Vanvehu. Zekeli Vanvehu is a pasuk that is from Az Yashir, but a pasuk that's used to say, Zekeli, this is my God, Vanvehu, and I want to adorn him. I want to beautify him. Anvehu is the limud for what we call Hidur Mitzvah. It's a requirement of Hidur Mitzvah. And Rashi says that Yavesh is a lack in Hidur Mitzvah. It's lacking in Zekeli Vanvehu. Tosafot says, I don't understand what Rashi is talking about because Zekeli Vanvehu, Hidur Mitzvah, is an enhancement to a mitzvah. It's not the mitzvah itself. It's never me'akev a mitzvah. Hidur Mitzvah is always the chatchila. It's never pasul b'diavad. So that cannot be the reason why Lulav HaYavesh is pasul over here. Tosafot says, we learn it out from Etrog, which is a pre-8th Hadar. Hadar is specifically written here, and it's not just about Hidur Mitzvah, but Hadar here is integral to the mitzvah. And therefore, a lack of Hadar makes it pasul over here because it's not just about Hidur Mitzvah, that's integral to the mitzvah of Lulav and Etrog is Hadar, that it has to be Mehudar. And Yavesh is a lack of Mehudar, not in the sense of Hidur Mitzvah like we see every Wilson Shas, but the lack of Hadar here, which is integral to the mitzvah. You have to argue, and this is true, when we said this back early in the Masechta, when we discussed this with regards to the Eged and Hidur Mitzvah, that there are two types of Hidur Mitzvah. There's sometimes a Hidur Mitzvah, which is an enhancement of the mitzvah, and sometimes a Hidur Mitzvah that's integral to the mitzvah. Even Tosfot himself is describing something like that here, which is Hadar is a Hidur Mitzvah that's integral to the mitzvah. And then there's a Hidur Mitzvah, which is an enhancement of the mitzvah. In both of those cases, you have to ask, can the Hidur Mitzvah stand independent of the mitzvah? Is it only when you have a mitzvah you can have Hidur Mitzvah, or can Hidur Mitzvah stand independent of the mitzvah? We discussed that extensively last time. With Rashi, you're going to have to explain something along those lines, which is when Rashi says, Zekeli Vanvehu, that he sees that there are two types of Hidur Mitzvah. There's Zekeli Vanvehu, where it's a Hidur, an enhancement to the mitzvah, and there's a Zekeli Vanvehu, which is integral to the mitzvah. How do you know which is which? It might be that when you have natural occurring items, you're using nature to serve Hashem like a lulav, and so on and so forth, there the hidur mitzvah is integral to the item because the natural state of the item is behidur. When it loses that hidur, it dries out, then it's no longer usable for the mitzvah because it's lacking that hidur mitzvah. Hidur mitzvah is integral to the mitzvah because that's the natural way it occurs. And since that's the natural way it occurs, when you lack that, it's not the item that you're looking for anymore. Whereas in Zekei Levanvil, when you nice chanukiah, nice talit, those are things that sit on top of the mitzvah, not integral to the mitzvah. But that's an important machloket here between Rashi and Tosafot with regards to what is the problem of lulav hayavesh. In addition, what is a lulav hayavesh? What does it mean that you have a dried out lulav? So Tosafot brings those that suggest that Gemara Avodah Zarah says that something's dried out when it lasts for 12 months. But it sits for 12 months, that's when it's dried out. So Tosafot says, that can't be over here. It can't be 12 months for it to be dried out. That's just way too long and that's way too dry. Dried out here for lulav, he says, is if you touch it, it flakes. It's so dry that when you touch it, it flakes. Now even that is a pretty extreme type of dryness, and it's usually not the right way to deal with like a growing. It's okay when you talk about something flaking, when you're talking about a solid object that flakes when you touch it, that's really dried out. But when you're talking about a branch of a tree or a lulav, to say that it's flaking, that's not the natural occurrence of what happens to it. So there are others that say, like I think Balamor says, that if it doesn't have any sign of moisture in it, that's already lulav yavesh. And the way that we paskin is like the description of the Raivud, which is that it's so dry that there's no moisture in it, and if you put it in water, it would make no difference. Putting in water would give no more life or would not do anything to this lulav. That's already too dry. And that's the way that we paskin the Shulchan Aruch, that that's considered to be a lulav that's too dry. Obviously, they had huge problems in Europe with this because there are no lulavim in Europe. They had to import them from Eretz Yisrael. By the time they got there, many times they were dried out and white. And the Ramah comments over there that if you have a white lulav, it is pasul, but b'diavad, if there's nothing else to use, then you can be somech on the shita de Tosfot and the other shitot that say that dried out is only when it flakes and not when it's white. Because obviously they were having major issues in getting lulavim in Eastern Europe at that time. Therefore they were matzir in these cases to be somech on those minority opinions as what is dried out. But for us, we don't. Kapasik v'tani. The Mishnah says, without any qualification, you can't use this lulav no matter what. Lo shna b'yom tov rishon, lo shna b'yom tov sheni. Doesn't matter whether it's first day of Yom Tov or the second day of Yom Tov. So one, the first day of Yom Tov is a mitzvah deoraita, which is lakachtem lechem b'yom harishon. The mitzvah of lulav, the mitzvah of the arbat minim, outside of the mikdash is only for the first day. That's the mitzvah deoraita. After that, it's only a mitzvah derabanan, zecher the mikdash. Whereas with regard to the mikdash itself, all 7 days are deoraita. And a Rambam says, in some other places, defines mikdash as being Yerushalayim as a whole, and that's why some people are makpid when they go into Yerushalayim during Sukkot, that they take lulav again inside of Yerushalayim, because of the possibility, according to Rambam, that there might be a mitzvah d'oraita being in Yerushalayim, and not in the, just in the Mikdash, in the environs of Yerushalayim. So now, the Gemara says, I don't understand. You're saying to me the halachot of this Mishnah are independent of being the first or second day. Doesn't matter if it's Yom Tov Rishon when it's d'oraita, Yom Tov Sheni when it's d'rabanan. So the Gemara says, Bishlama Yavesh. Right, so by Yavesh, I understand, because Hadar Beinan, you need it to be Hadar. For Tosov, that means Priyetz Hadar, you need it. But Rashi means Zekeli Vanveo, it has to be Hidur Mitzvah. Veleka, and that's lacking. So that's lacking both on the first day and the second day, so it's an integral problem to the item. El Gazul, when it comes to Gazul, Bishlama Yom Tov Rishon Dichtiv Lachem. I understand on the first day it's a problem, because it says, Vakachtam Lachem Bayom Ha Rishon. So Bayom Ha Rishon, you have a problem of Lachem. Mishal Lachem, El Bayom Tov Shemi, Am I Lo? Why can't I take it on Yom Tov Sheni? What's the problem of taking a lulav hagazul on the second day of Yom Tov? Or again, on Chol HaMoed, if you take it after the first day, why is it problematic? It seems to be lachem is only a requirement on the first day. So the Gemara says, Am Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Mishum Dabalei Mitzvah Haba'a Be'Aveira. It's a problem of a mitzvah that comes through an Aveira. Shinemar. The Pasuk says, Ve'veitim Gazul Ve'eta Pseach Ve'eta Choleh. So the Gemara says, these are the korbanot that you're going to bring. That's what it says in Malachi. You're going to bring all these korbanot that have problems associated with them. They're not the type of korbanot that Hashem wants. So the Gemara says, gazul dumi de piseach. The pasuk compares gazul to a piseach, something that has a mum in it, to a gazul. Ma piseach leitle takanta. Just like a piseach, somewhat an animal that's lame or has this mum in it, it's not something you can rectify. It's a permanent problem. Af gazul leitle takanta. A stolen lulav is permanently problematic. Lo shna lifnei yeush, lo shna le'achar yeush. Right, that will leave for tomorrow, but it doesn't matter whether it was before the Balim had yeush or whether it's after the Balaim had Yeush. Bishlama lifnei Yeush, beforehand, before they are miyayesh, adam ki arkiv mikem amar rachmana. The pasuk says that you have to bring your own korban, the lavdi dehu, and this isn't your own, because you stole it. El al achayush, hakanya beyush. After Yeush, you're already kone, and it's yours now, so why can't you utilize it? Allah mishum dabale mitzvah abba bi aveira. The problem is that it's a mitzvah that derives through an aveira. So that's a mitzvah of abba aveira, which needs to be discussed more thoroughly. But it also raises an issue over here, which is that the Gemara is somewhat inconsistent. The pasuk says, lakachm lachem ba yom rishon, pre eitz hadar. So the word hadar is found in the pasuk, and so is lachem. How come the Gemara says, oh, hadar goes for all 7 days, no question, and lachem is only for the first day? So Rashi suggests over here the differences. One is doraita, the first day is doraita, so we have all these qualifications. After that's derabanan, we don't have all those qualifications. So gazul is problematic on the first day, and hadar, here the Gemara seems to think is problematic all the time, but Tosa wants to understand why. The pasuk has all of them in there and says, beyom rishon. Because maybe you'll suggest that things that are before the word Yom HaRishon only apply to Yom HaRishon. Things that are after Yom HaRishon don't apply. But he says, no, I have a list of items that aren't that way. He says, I have a list of other items that we learn out from Lachem, including Lakachtam Lachem is Lakichat Tama, that you have to take all four meaning together. He said, if you're right, anything before the word Yom HaRishon only has to be on Yom HaRishon, that means after the first day, you don't have to take one of the meaning every day, because you don't need a Lakichat Tama. There are Rishonim that suggest that when we learned the sugya of the Arba Minim, where they have to take them all together, there were Rishonim that suggested after the first day you didn't have to take them together, you could take them separately. But Tosafot is not of that opinion. He says, how do I reconcile this? So in the end, Tosafot says, V'kach nira, d'haino t'ayma mishum d'yom rishon d'oraita b'gvulin, v'shayomei d'rabanan zeich l'mikdash. Hilkach, b'ikar ha'lekicha. Anything has to do with the fundamental taking of the lulav, kagon, that it has four minim. Or the kikala kol echad vechad. The person has to take their own lulav. Tikun mishar yomei kein doraita. That we, the darabanan patterns the doraita, and you have to do the same thing. V'chein v'hadar, mishum hidur mitzvah. Hadar also, because the hidur mitzvah exists on all these days, because hidur mitzvah should apply, whether it's doraita or a mitzvah darabanan. Aval b'chaser, something that's missing a little bit from it. Ur b'sha'ul or barut, lo tikuna, they were not mitakein. And with the theft, it's a plukta. We're going to see it's a machloket here between Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel as to whether it's a problem after this point in time. So Tosafot tries to draw a differentiation about which things are continued after the first day. It's true, everybody agrees the first day is the right, afterwards is only de Rabbanan. Tosafot tries to explain the difference by saying that when it comes to things that are doraita and are integral to the taking of the lulav, or fundamental to the mitzvah, those items, Chazal, when they made it de Rabbanan, also patterned it after the doraita. So just like the integral to the chicha on the first days, you take it all together. And each person takes their own lulav, not one person for everybody. But that's true of all the days of Sukkot. And just like hidur mitzvah is something that applies to the mitzvah of lulav, then so too it'll apply in all the days, because it can equally apply to a doraita derabanan. But things like chaser, or things like sha'ul, borrowed items, those things aren't integral to the taking of the lulav. They're somewhat exogenous issues. Now, chaser is a little harder that Tosafot throws it in there, because chaser would seem to me to be a problem of a lack of hidur, but Tosafot categorizes it differently. He says they didn't pattern that after the doraita, and therefore he separates between these items, trying to come up with a way to separate between what is only relevant on Yom Rishon and what is relevant for all 7 days. He tries to give some framework, but again, it's not simple to come up with this distinction or understand the distinction between what is and what is not, even though the Gemara itself takes that up. Right now, with regards to mitzvah baba veira, there are a number of items that we have to discuss. I'm going to defer it till tomorrow because there's a lot to discuss here. We'll defer that discussion till tomorrow and we'll discuss it when we start up tomorrow's daf, different approaches of the Rishonim to this issue. Okay, we'll stop here.